Hi, I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to talk about intermittent fasting and a lot of other things. It begins with a study from Hunan Agricultural University in China. After an intermittent fasting diet intervention, patients achieve complete diabetic remission. That's important. In other words, defined scientifically as HbA1c, or average blood sugar, levels of less than 6.5% at least 1 year after stopping diabetic medication. This was published in the peer-reviewed Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism. But what is intermittent fasting? Is it difficult? Can you do it? What else will it do? There's a lot. A little background. 3.5 years ago, I was in a conversation at a national anti-aging scientific conference, and the director, Dr. Ronald Klatz, who is one of the most respected anti-aging experts, medical doctors in the world, he and another doctor, Dr. Robert Goldman, MD, PhD, teach doctors how they can apply anti-aging science, good science. Now, most of that science is based upon stem cells. We know that if you can control the stem cell, if you can in any way manipulate the stem cell through lifestyle intervention or more often than not through genetic engineering, which is what most of them are trying to do, then you can keep that cell line alive much, much longer. And therefore, that's where hundreds of thousands of scientists and Silicon Valley's billionaires are putting their money. After all, if you can add 5, 10, 20, 30 years onto a person's life in good health, where you can reverse crepey skin, you can reverse muscle diminishment, you can help with more energy, clearer thoughts, reduce or eliminate memory loss and dementia, Alzheimer's, think of what that would mean. Well, on one hand, you'd think of it as a business and it would be a trillion-dollar business. On the other hand, from my point of view, it would help end a lot of human suffering. Why? Because I spent my entire adult life studying aging, first as a junior scientist, and then as a senior scientist, then as a senior research fellow and the director of the Department of Anti-Aging at the Institute of Applied Biology. I did over 165 original studies, 55 clinical studies with people. And I came to understand what you can't find in a petri dish, what you can't find in some laboratory rats. You have to work with people and their cultures and their habits all over the world. And I would travel for a week here, 2 weeks there, a month there, to the rainforest of the Amazon, to the Alps in Italy, to the countryside in France. And I would then look at, are people living long in what is considered long? Are they healthy as they age? And I found that there are people living longer and healthier around the world, far, far more advanced than here in the United States. And yet, we're told we have the most expensive medical system, more doctors, hospitals, nurses, than just about anywhere in the developed nations. So we should be healthiest. We're not. We're dead last. And we should be living the longest. We're not, by a big margin. Why? No one's asking that question. I'll answer one piece of this very complex problem, and that is that we consume too much in beverages, like soft drinks, and in food, like pizzas and French fries and fried foods, grilled foods, barbecued foods, highly processed foods, denatured foods that do not help us with our health or prevention, but in fact cause inflammation. That inflammation in turn, depending upon the vulnerability of the organ where it is most, let's say most being stressed, whether it's the heart or lungs, if you're smoking, it's going to be your heart and your lungs and your skin. Do you ever look at the skin around people that drink and smoke? And what did people do watching Hollywood movies, they drank and smoked, just like the people in the screen did. Well, look at how that impacted their lifestyles. We weren't told that it impacted your health or your lifestyle. So my mother, my father, my older brother, all my aunts and uncles all smoked. Anywhere from light smoking, 2 packs a day, to heavy smoking, 4 packs a day. And everywhere they were, everything stunk. I remember as a kid, everybody stunk. And then if they drank coffee and then smoked, they really stunk. And but what was happening in their body was inflammation in the lungs, the heart. As a result, by the time they hit 50, they were well into their death process. You were lucky to hit 60. But in any case, why? Because the foods we were eating too much and the wrong ones, the fact we were lacking exercise, we never fasted, and we drank, all that contributed to inflammation, shortening of the telomeres, and that led to free radicals just all over the body, destroying or damaging cells. In fact, we were damaging about 12,000 gene alterations per day per cell. Just do the math. Let's say you have somewhere between 40 and 70 trillion cells, and each of those cells are affected negatively 12 times a day, or 12,000 times a day. Then just imagine what the outcome's going to be. You're going to die really, really shorter than what you should. And we thought it was normal because everyone was doing what was normal. We were in a group think. We didn't think individually. That person was considered, you know, a health nut, right? But they weren't. Look back. They were right. High fiber diets, clean foods, plant-based diet. Well, that was an extremist. That was someone to fear. What else are they going to do? You know, what other kind of strange thoughts are they going to have if they're eating vegetables and not meat like real Americans? I mean, that's the environment I grew up in. I was considered the strange person. Now, because I was an athlete, because I was a lot of people's friends and a little different, they let me get away with it. Yeah, get away with trying to be healthy as if somehow that was a bad thing. No, they're all dead. People I went to high school with, and everyone my parents knew, they're all dead. And I'm thinking, wow, did they have to die that soon? The answer is no. Now, here's where intermittent fasting comes. I first got the idea in 1968 when I was invited to attend a vegetarian conference upstate New York. I'd never been to one. I was young. I was like 20 years old, I was healthy, but I went. And I found that all the people there are very old. I mean, in their late 70s and 80s and 90s, but they all seemed very healthy. They were lean, they were strong, they were vibrant. I remember one woman, she had blue eyes, but her whole face was just vibrant, and she was 91. And they sure weren't gourmet cooks. Oh, wow. You know, the food was just terrible. But it was healthy. They just didn't know how to season it. And everything was raw. But then they did fasting. And I remember him giving a lecture to everyone why we were having our final meal today at 6 o'clock. You'll be finished by 7. Don't eat anything more until tomorrow morning, at least till 7, ideally about 9. 12 to 15 hours in between meals can help your body, rejuvenate you. There was no science to prove that, but he was a physician, and he said this is one of the reasons that he had patients overcoming diseases, all kinds of diseases, and living longer lives. So that stuck in my mind. Later, when I had the opportunity, I then started to fast some 1,000 rats at the Institute of Applied Biology. They thought it was stupid. They didn't want to authorize the program, but finally I got it authorized. And lo and behold, I divided the rats in half. 500 just went through their regular daily program, and 500 went through their regular daily program, except I took the food out at a certain time each day and didn't put it back to the next day later in the day. So they had about 12 hours of fasting. Well, guess what? Those rats lived over 27% longer lifespans. I presented at the monthly meeting, and they thought, well, that can't be. And I said, well, it is. So they assigned a scientist there, her name was Elena, to come up and watch. So she did. And so she would check in, and she would look at the different groups of rats. And sure enough, one group was living a normal life, but getting overbeat, biting their tails, cannibalism, a lot going on. The other group, fasting, nothing, healthy. And then using treadmills, much healthier, much more stamina, endurance, and strength than the groups that were not fasting. And they lived, again, a longer life. Then they took it seriously. So from that time till now, in my clinical work, seeing people, I asked them to do intermittent fasting. And because it really helps with rejuvenation. And so it's really important. It's one of the things that can help us reduce calories, keep our body mass index, our body fat, especially abdominal fat, down. And in this study, it shows that it can also, you can achieve complete diabetic remission. And almost everyone I've ever worked with diabetes who's been on multiple medications, still couldn't get their blood sugar down. No medications, normal blood sugar, and normal heart, and normal blood pressure. So this is a journal of clinical endocrinology and metabolism. Scientists see this. But it doesn't translate from having proof that something works into sharing it with the rest of the society. So just want to share something important with you. So when you can put people in diabetic remission with something that simple, that uncomplicated, that non-toxic, why not do it? From the University of Miami School of Medicine comes a study about aloe vera. Now, I take aloe vera every single day. I take 2 ounces in the morning in my smoothie. And I know that people in this audience also use aloe vera because it's really good for you. I mean, there are hundreds of studies, thousands on aloe vera. And here's the latest. Aloe vera is found to improve Alzheimer's disease. Scientists from the University of Miami School of Medicine determined that a constituent of aloe vera reduces Alzheimer's disease symptoms and increases cognitive scores. The researchers gave a supplement with aloe, what is called polymannose, P-O-L-Y-M-A-N-N-O-S-E, which is very important, and to Alzheimer's patients for 1 year. And they tested the people every 3 months. And the researchers found that the cognitive improvements occurred in 46% of the patients taking the aloe vera. The research also found that several cytokines, C-Y-T-O-K-I-N-E-S, and inflammatory factors, those are bad, that's inflammation that I talked about earlier, were significantly decreased, turning off the flame. And this, of course, directly relates to a reduction of neuroinflammation in the brain. Other research has determined that neuroinflammation is symptomatic in Alzheimer's disease, in Parkinson's, in ALS, and multiple sclerosis as well. The patients consume 4 teaspoons a day of the supplement. 4 teaspoons, remember, 3 teaspoons equal a tablespoon, so it's just a little over a tablespoon. And this, their cognitive scores were determined using the Alzheimer's Disease Assessment Scale Cognitive Subscale System. So it works. So if you want to help, and here again, if you want to help prevent inflammation of the brain and hence help prevent the deterioration of what occurs that leads to dementia and Alzheimer's, then have aloe vera preventatively each day. That's so important. And get organic aloe, because I've been to the Dominican Republic. I went to the aloe fields. I saw how all that crap is raised and brought into the United States. Now, from the University of Toronto comes a study about how scientists reveal how to successfully age gracefully. Now, age isn't a topic few people like discussing, especially if you're over the age of 40. So how do some people manage to stay healthy and vital in what scientists call the optimal aging process? A new study revealed the key factors which can keep you lively well into old age. They looked at 7,000 middle-aged and older Canadian adults from the University of Toronto, and they found that keeping physically active, being in a healthy relationship, were more likely than their peers to maintain excellent health over a 3-year study period. Participants were not obese. They never smoked. They were high-income workers, and those with no history of sleep problems and heart disease and arthritis were also more likely to stay in great shape over these 36 months. Overall, healthy people in any of these groups were less likely than others to develop cognitive, physical, or emotional problems. So, 3 years, that's a good study. And none of them had any signs of memory loss, disability, or chronic pain. So that's terrific. In fact, the study participants were surprised and delighted to learn that more than 70% of that sample maintained their excellent state of health even further. So let's just summarize what can help you as you age. First and foremost, if you're in a healthy relationship, that's a big plus. Sharing things together, being able to have each other's attention and love and respect and trust, very big. Also, being able to be physically active and exercising, terrific. Being able to have a healthy diet, not smoking, not drinking, also good. So you see, if you're healthy and you're not obese, you're going to have more likely better sleep outcomes. And a good night's sleep is very important for your overall immunity. And so you're healthy overall. Now, let's say you're single. There's no reason you can't be as equally long-lived and healthy as a married person. Just make sure that you know who you are. Stay focused upon maintaining a balanced life. Don't overcompensate by overdoing something. Do everything as if it counted, but make sure you count first and foremost. I know a lot of people, including members of this radio audience, who are smart people. They're successful in their careers. And yet, once their parents developed Alzheimer's or some form of cognitive disability, they began to give all their attention to them, and in the process, their own health diminished substantially. And every one of them has suffered because of that. These are good people, but also they're good children to their parents. They knew that there was a time in life when the parent had to raise them. For better or worse, they survived, and now they're there to help their parents. Some are using holistic protocols with great success. Others didn't do the whole protocols with no success. This is one of those things where you can't do just a little bit. The more you do, the better the outcome. And by the way, one way I'll finish off with a University of Washington study, how to sleep better without medication. Soak in more daylight outdoors, more sunlight, more outdoor activity. Get that into your system. Not only does it create more vitamin D, but also relaxes you and allows you to fall asleep quicker. That's the latest on health and healing. And we're going to take a break. We have a lot more to come. Please stay with us. Welcome back, everyone. We're broadcast all over the world. I'm Gary Nall, broadcasting from a secondary studio, not in New York City, where our main studio is, down in Florida at an animal sanctuary. In the background, you can see my blue and gold macaw there. That's Sweetie. She was rescued 22 years ago. I have a lot of animals here I take care of, get them back to good health, and wherever possible, find them a loving home for life. We all need a loving home, don't we? We need loving friendships and relationships, but not always easy when you consider how many people, organizations, groups are interested in controlling what we do, what we eat, what we see on television, what we read, how we go about our days. What is the answer? Well, part of that solution is to become informed. The good news is, for over a year now, John LaBelle, a wonderful professor of architecture, Pratt Institute for, I guess, over 40 years, he asked me, could we do a newsletter? I said, fine. So he does a newsletter on health and healing issues. Now, it's free one day a week, Mondays. We're redoing everything. So he's going to take what we've learned on health nutrition during the week and put that in there so you get a summary of all that. But we're adding something at a small cost. It's only somewhere around 28 or 29 cents, pennies, a day. And something that will help you become more aware of everything going on that impacts your well-being and the planet's well-being. The rest of the week at 6 o'clock in the morning, you're going to get the latest news, but also you will have an ability once a month. We're going to have a conference call with myself and John, and you'll be sending in your questions to John, and then I'll try to address as many as I can, at least those that would impact everyone. So everyone will benefit from every answer, and then we'll have a chance to talk as many people as possible to get on that line. So that's something I've never done, but I'm willing to do it because I know that there are a lot of you who want to be well-informed, healthier, and are disciplined enough to say, yes, my time to get healthy and get focused. No more excuses for laziness, indifference, or hubris. Good. That's brand new. And that's only for you who are subscribing for the Gary Nall newsletter. Secondly, you're going to get advanced segments of my new books, including my brand new book that is coming out in 2 weeks. And next week, we're going to give you some segments from it. And that's very important because it's a really upbeat, positive book. And everyone else will wait until they can purchase the book. You're getting segments. Next, I'm going to take on different issues like women's health issues. And we're going to be putting important information, and not just a little bit of information, lots of information on women's health than men's health. We're also going to give you the first chance to see articles that I write before I publish them, commentaries, essays, investigative reports. We're also going to be doing something that I've never done before, but we have a lot of people willing now to change, willing to really deal with health and health issues. So we're going to be having doctors, holistic nurses, our, let's say homeopaths, nutritionists, dietitians, yoga, meditation, traditional Chinese medicine, information on a regular basis that I don't do on the air. So you're getting all this information, far more than just information on health each day. How do you get into this? And also when there's big movements, and by the way, right now there's a huge movement going on that I don't discuss on the show, but you're going to get this information. And that is, there are, I believe, going to be major changes in CDC, the FDA, National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, Anthony Fauci. For example, Ron DeSantis, the Attorney General in Florida, and the Surgeon General in Florida have just brought suit, and they're going after all the misinformation, all the lies concerning COVID and its mandates, and they're suing the manufacturers as well. Now, if that succeeds, if they can keep it in court and not have it dismissed, attorney generals all over the country are going to follow suit. You're going to see millions of documents have to be released, emails and texts. There'll be committees in Congress grilling these people. They haven't been able to up to this point because Nancy Pelosi has protected all these, protected the media, protected the scientists, doctors, pharmaceutical industry. They've all been protected. Not now. So there's going to be a lot of reckoning. We're going to cover that. So here's what you want to do if you want to be involved by getting this every morning at 6 o'clock. You can get it for free only on Mondays. and it's health and nutrition information. All the rest of the week, a whole lot more information is coming at you. So if you say, oh my goodness, I have diabetes and I'd like to see what an alternative doctor, board-certified physician, has to say, we're going to list some board-certified physicians. We're going to try to find the top 10 in every category to share with you. All right? Go to GaryNall.com. It's that simple. GaryNall.com. Scroll down. You'll see newsletter. Go to that and you can sign up. It's only $7 a month. That's it. Not 70, $7 a month. What is that, about 28 cents a day? So that'll help you. Now to something very important. I want to show you some clips of some very mean-spirited, and in my opinion, vile human beings. I want to show you people who are condemning those who are not vaccinated without asking, why were people not vaccinated? Could it be because they had a pre-existing condition? Therefore, medically, even though the doctor would be pro-vaccine, the patient accepting pro-vaccine, the medical evidence says if you get this vaccine and you already have an autoimmune condition like lupus, it could harm you, could even kill you. What about those who had an organ transplant? What about those who had cancer? What about those whose immune system couldn't tolerate another immune supercharge? They didn't care. What about people who are already infected and therefore had natural immunity? They didn't care. They simply condemned everybody in mass as if they were all one. And they then got pummeled. People were physically assaulted, verbally assaulted. They were condemned. They lost their jobs, friends, family. So now there is a new documentary, and it's called Anecdotal. Because in my whole career, anytime someone has gone to a mainstream doctor that they were seeing for any disease, and they work with me, and I reverse that disease with them, the doctor said, well, that's only anecdotal and probably was just a placebo. And that's why now, and for decades, I film everyone. This is them before. This is the protocol. Here's their blood work, of medical records. Here's afterwards. That is not anecdotal. That's real science. Here's the evidence. Here were their viral loads. Here's their viral loads. Here were their symptoms. Here there's no symptoms. Here they were HIV positive. Here they're HIV negative. Here's all the evidence. Here's every blood chemistry from Roche Laboratory. Here's the medical reports. Are you going to say it's anecdotal? Yes, they will. They cannot ever. The 900,000 doctors can never admit that an alternative and complementary lifestyle prevention and looking at the non-toxic treatments first are important or have any merit, even though it's in the peer-reviewed scientific literature. So just imagine trusting the government, trusting Fauci, believing in vaccines, having had vaccines, no adverse effects, and you took this. Now you end up crippled. Someone ends up dead. And yet, no one in the media, no one in medicine, no one in science, as part of the group, is willing to acknowledge this. We're talking about hundreds of thousands dead. We're talking about millions injured. A major catastrophe. And these people are invisible. But not just invisible, they're being attacked. Here's a 10-minute clip of this documentary to show, even 5-minute clip, to show you how it is that Joy Reid and these other people, and Joy Behar and the guy on CNN, Don Lemon, what they really think of you and what lacking in spiritual empathy they have. And Howard Stern, when did he become an expert on what you should or should not do? Take a watch. Watch this, please. And if you don't have capacity to watch it, listen carefully.
I'm not anti-anything. I don't want what I'm experiencing to have some sort of political bent. I just want my story out there so I and others like me can get the help that we are entitled to.
This is not political. This is a human issue.
And many other people are getting sick, and no one is willing to step up and help us.
And so it's usually someone says, like, oh, really? Which one did you have? And I'll say, oh, I got Pfizer. Oh, that's strange. My husband got that one and he's fine. I'm like, Yeah, and so did a lot of my family members, and they're all totally fine, but some people are not fine.
And by the time I got to my car, I noticed that my face was burning and tingling.
I can't feel my face. The first time I said those words was 10 months ago. The last time I said those words was 2 months ago, but I'm one of the lucky ones.
I went to the emergency room probably 15 times.
I was a father of a 16-year-old son. My government lied to me. They said it was safe.
The vaccines are safe, I promise you. They are safe and effective.
The president promised a safe and effective vaccine in record time, and President Trump delivered.
These are safe and effective.
Vaccines are safe, effective, and free.
I have facial paresthesia and nerve pain for the last 5 months.
Paresthesia is a word that I'd never heard of a year ago, but now it wakes me up every morning.
Severe, painful paresthesias, which are burning, tingling.
The people who are not getting vaccines, who are believing the lies on the internet instead of science, it's time to start shaming them. What else? Or leave them behind.
One word describes how I felt in the first few months after my diagnosis: abandoned.
I did what I was asked, got harmed, and there's no program in place for me.
I was fighting doctors trying to get them to listen to what was happening to her because nobody else was researching.
I have reported my symptoms to VSafe, VAERS, CDC, FDA, Pfizer.
They say we have a small percentage, but how do they truly know what the percentage is when they won't even acknowledge that we exist?
So she will not acknowledge it. If I talk about it, she changes the subject.
They don't understand, like, yes, I look fine on the outside, but not in the inside, not what I'm feeling, not the vibrations, the muscle twitching, the fatigue.
When are we going to stop putting up with the idiots in this country and just say it's mandatory to get vaccinated?
After 6 weeks of neurological reactions from the vaccine, I began to share my experience with people. I was shamed.
Oh, you can't shame them. You can't call them stupid. You can't call them silly. Yes, they are.
I was told that I was ethically and morally irresponsible because sharing my story could sway people away from getting vaccinated.
Let me be clear. I am pro-vaccine.
We are pro-vaccine and pro-science.
And I have always vaccinated my kids. I've always been vaccinated myself.
As a health professional, I understand the danger of creating vaccine hesitancy. Vaccines have saved countless lives, but you cannot erase people who are harmed.
We supported the vaccine. We're not irrational. We're not ignorant. We're just a group of people whose lives have drastically changed because of this, and we're not included in the mainstream dialogue.
And it turns out the primary freedom they want is the freedom to be stupid.
I'm listening to Dr. Fauci. I don't have to listen to a million people. Just listen to him.
I represent science. And if you're attacking me, you're really attacking science. I mean, everybody knows that.
Many people who've had this experience have been silenced because we're told that our story is not significant because we are merely anecdotals.
But FDA officials instead told us, oh, these stories, AKA my life, are just anecdotes. Well, when you're the person who is harmed, it is your 100%.
I've been observing it, and I can't deny observation. That's how science happens, initially through observation, then we confirm through hypothesis, experiment, and data. My data is anecdotal, my observational group is significant, but we need additional studies to help.
As you've heard, whether you vaccinate or not, I'm going to support you. I don't tell people to vaccinate. I don't tell people not to vaccinate. I tell people, do your homework first. Unfortunately, the vast majority of people don't do any homework, even scientists, physicians, because one of the people, if you were just listening, not watching, one of the people testifying at a Senate hearing is a medical doctor. And when he got the shots, he believed it was good. He was doing what he was told to do. Now he ends up in terrible condition. Nobody acknowledges and nobody helps. You see, they can't do both. They can't say the shots are safe and effective, get them. You get them, now you get adverse effects. And they say, oh, that's unfortunate, you got injured by the shot. No, they have to say, wasn't from the vaccine. We're living in denial. That's what the lawsuits are going to prove. And that's what this whole house of cards is completely collapsing. We want to thank Todd Rose for doing a wonderful piece upon groupthink. We played part one yesterday. Because how is it that so many people, collectively, like a collective mass, will not challenge authority, will not demonstrate against authority in the United States? We haven't, think of all the things that we've done wrong. Weapons of mass destruction didn't exist. No. The Vietnam War, young people protested. The average person never protested. Invasion of Libya, nobody protested. Iraq, Syria, the coup in Ukraine. So all the important things that we should do, we don't. Even right today, they were going to, Bernie Sanders had a amendment that we were going to get out of supporting the war in Yemen, which has taken hundreds of thousands of lives and thousands and thousands of young kids and children, Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, and we're supporting it. And no, they wouldn't pass it. That shows you how captured your legislators are. What if you ask them, why don't you take you and your family, your children, and go live in Yemen? Not in a palace, not in a gated community. Those don't exist. But like everyone else, just trying to survive. Oh, then they'd come back with a very different opinion. Wow. How do we get to where we're not thinking deeply? We're not thinking spiritually. We're not thinking with empathy and compassion for those who are suffering, either due directly or indirectly to our hubris and indifference. How do we get to where we don't question authority? Part two of discussing that.
One of the most important collective illusions that we've ever discovered has to do with the way that people define a successful life. We looked at the private opinions of the American public across 76 different attributes that could go into a successful life. Out of those 76, the vast majority of the American public believes that most people would rank fame as number one. There's just one problem. In private, it's actually dead last. It is 76th out of 76 possible attributes. We don't care about fame, but we believe that most everybody else cares about fame more than anything else. Our public institutions are actually being built around a false view of what people want out of life. In our media, in our businesses, those people are also under the same exact illusions. We have commercials, we have movies and television shows all telling us that a successful life is about being famous. Now, the dominant thing that kids talk about is wanting to be famous. One kid I remember saying, I want 1 million followers. He couldn't tell you for what. He just wanted 1 million followers. We know that most people, even in the younger generation, do not privately value fame, but they are even more convinced than the older generations that most people do. They are internalizing the illusion as their own values, and that will become the dominant view in society in the future if we don't do something about it. Being aware that collective illusions exist is the starting point, and it comes down to us being honest about ourselves to each other. Populists ask, what does a fulfilling life mean to you? What we found was really astonishing. Out of those 76 trade-off priorities, in the thousands and thousands of people that we have studied, no two people were identical. Nobody can tell you what a successful life is. You have to discover that for yourself. It's about knowing who you are. If you want to understand whether the people you care about are pursuing a life that's not their own, ask them why they care about what they're doing. Why do you want to be famous? By having your ideas challenged, that gives you a better sense for who your true self is. If we recognize our true shared values, it fundamentally changes how we see one another. We now recognize that investing in each other, in enabling you to pursue the life you want to live, is actually better for you and for me. The greatest strength of social media is its democratizing tendency. We don't have to just look to elites and a few news outlets to tell us about us. We can actually communicate with each other. But when we engage online, we tend to think that we're interacting with a reasonable sample of the actual population. But it's not true. Close to 80% of all content on social media is generated by about 10% of the users. That 10% tends to be extreme on most social issues. They are the vocal fringe. When you have a vocal minority that is perceived as the majority, critical mass of us will actually either self-silence or we will actually go along to get along, and it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. This is how collective illusions form. It's not terribly surprising that some of the first people to start to use these tools to manipulate were leaders who need consensus to conserve power.
Venezuela no le temblará el pulso para combatir a los grupos terroristas.
An example of this is Nicolas Maduro, the leader of Venezuela. For a long time, it looked like on social media that he had a pretty good beat on the consensus of the people that he led. So almost everything that he would say, stories that were written about him that were positive, would be retweeted and shared, and it looked like this represented some kind of consensus. But it turned out a significant percentage of his so-called followers were actually what we call social bots. These are fake accounts that only exist to retweet anything positive about him or that he said, and importantly, to attack the opposition. When Twitter banned them, the real consensus was with the opposition. And that started to emerge and be retweeted as more and more people recognized that it was okay to say what they actually thought. Social media is a free-for-all in terms of who can shout the loudest and who can silence other people in the name of masquerading as a majority and manufacturing collective illusions. Your willingness to conform and your unwillingness to challenge what you think the group believes will actually contribute to leading the group astray. The solution to our online life is to get offline once in a while. The most important thing you can do is continue to have conversations with your family, with your neighbors, with your community. Don't carry that distortion over into the way you treat people in real life. So this idea of conformity, it isn't just a choice. Every one of us as human beings is hardwired to prefer to be with our group. Human beings are not lone wolves. We're a pack species. On trials, when we deviated from the group, it triggered what scientists call an error signal. This cascading signal across your brain that is literally meant to short-circuit everything else to tell you something is fundamentally wrong and you should pay attention. If you deviate from your group, you are actually punished. This conformity bias, sometimes it's been used for benevolent ends, right? One of my favorite examples of that comes from the story of the Bogota mimes. Bogota historically has had a lot of disobeying like traffic rules. Everybody jaywalks, nobody stops at lights. Several years ago, they got a new mayor who realized there was a problem and realized that you couldn't just continue to punish them with corrupt cops issuing tickets and getting bribes. He hired a bunch of out-of-work mimes, like clowns, you know, the... and he put them at intersections all over the city. They have no power to, like, imprison you, no power to write a ticket. All they did was every time they saw someone jaywalk, they would just point it out. They would publicly shame them as mimes. And it turned out that this public shaming had a massive effect. It had a significant reduction of traffic accidents and even deaths. I think it's a funny story. What I don't like about it is I'm not a huge fan of public shaming for any reason, but it does speak to the fact that this is such a hardwired, powerful force for human beings. But sometimes the group isn't correct. There's nothing magical about group consensus that guarantees that it is a fact. It can just literally be consensus because no one's ever challenged it. It may be a collective illusion. The group may not actually believe this, but because you think the group does, your willingness to conform and your unwillingness to challenge what you think the group believes will actually contribute to leading the group astray. In fact, history is littered with examples of groups erring in massive ways, and there's an enormous cost socially. In the 60s, a majority of whites in the South no longer approved of segregation. They wanted desegregation and integration. However, they were fully convinced that most white Southerners still favored segregation. In other words, they were under this collective illusion, right? And because nobody was willing to challenge the belonging to their group. We allowed segregation to continue for many years because we were behaving in ways that were no longer consistent with our values. We are now in an environment where free expression, the ability to disagree openly, is under such threat by a vocal fringe that recognizes that the only way that they can get their way is to convince you that the majority believes something they don't and allow conformity bias to do the rest of the work. The cost to you of giving up your private values in the name of conformity is that you may actually come to believe the very thing that you don't agree with right now. We have to create the space that protects differences of opinion, that allows respectful disagreement in ways that are productive. How many illusions get punctured almost overnight when we realize, despite our differences, we have common ground as well?
Something to think about, and I'd like to hear your response. Give us a call, 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. We're going to take a break and come right back, and I won't be video streaming then because I want to take your calls, and I can't do it video streaming and take your calls simultaneously. Not yet. I'm building a new studio down here in which I'll be able to do that. Please stay with us. We have a lot more to share with you. Ask yourself, get away from all distractions. Go into a quiet meditation place and say, how many of the things have you believed in have you had the courage to deconstruct? Very quickly before we go to a guest, I believed I had discovered something that was important, and that was that we don't have to eat any animal proteins, no dairy, no beef, chicken, fish, veal, pork, nothing from an animal, in order to get all of our 8 essential amino acids, essential because our body doesn't produce them. We have to get them from exogenous or outside sources. When I did it, I thought I'd made a mistake. I asked Dr. Berman, who came in the morning. I said, Vic, I made a mistake here. Please double check, find out where my mistake was when I was using a nitrogen assay on measuring all the proteins. He came back and said, no, your research is right. I still didn't believe myself. But 6 months later, I'd done a whole report, including with Dr. Hilliard Fiske, and we showed that over 5,000 combinations of normal-sized food gives you more protein that's utilized by the body than any animal protein. I took it to the meeting, and the director of the institute said, okay, now take some time and show us you're wrong. Okay. And so I did everything I could. I gave it to other people and said, this is flawed, find the flaw. 3 months later, I went back and I said, here are all the different people that tried to find a flaw. We cannot find a flaw. He said, good, now you've proven something. Can we do the same thing about our relationships, where we work, the kind of work we do, the kind of things we buy? Do we need them? Do we not need them? Why do we say the things we say? Why do we weaponize our words with the intent of hurting people? But we don't. We don't. That is groupthink. We've got to start thinking as individuals. Remember, we're a republic, not a democracy. Democracy, the consensus is held in power by the government. In a republic, the individual does not surrender their rights to be right, to make decisions because of the group. Just saying. Now for a problem that needs solutions, and I believe we found a solution. A new report that I read shows how toxic our water supplies are. We thought the Flint, Michigan, and the enormous amount of lead in the water there was only in Flint, Michigan. Now we realize thousands of other communities, large and small, have water just as polluted, if not more. Yet the average person looking at a glass of water, if it looks clear, they think it's clean and healthy, and the public health service will say the same thing. And so everybody says, drink the water. Okay, what if the water's toxic? What if we start consuming a large amount of these toxins? What happens? Dr. Roy Spicer, who got his PhD in microbiology from Rutgers University, has become one of America's leading advocates for drinking clean water, is on the phone with us now. Nice to have you back with us, Roy.
Nice to be with you, Gary.
Roy, tell us from your research and cite the research so we show people this is credible. Tell people what's wrong with the water coming out of most people's taps.
Well, first I'm going to refer to a large study that was done by the Environmental Working Group, and they found that over 250 million Americans are drinking water that they consider unsafe, with over 267 contaminants that were found in the overall water supplies. Many of these contaminants are linked to increased cancer risks, other health issues. The water has now been contaminated in just about every system in the United States. We look at water reports every day, and there's not one water system, municipal treated water system, that they don't see chemicals. Every system is chlorinated, or they use chloramine, and the chemical byproducts are considered Class B carcinogens by the EPA, Environmental Protection Agency. So on a daily basis, you're consuming water that has anywhere from several contaminants to up to dozens of contaminants. Chemicals, heavy metals, of course, fluoride is a very toxic chemical that's added in 70 water systems in the United States. But now there's another series of compounds, chemicals that have worked their way, found their way into our drinking supply. These are called PFAS chemicals. They've been used in firefighting foam, household cleaning products, carpeting and waterproof clothing, and many other consumer products. They're considered the most toxic chemicals that have been found to date. Most chemicals are toxic at parts per billion. These chemicals are toxic at parts per trillion. And they're very difficult to remove from water. It requires special filter materials. The average filter that you would buy on the internet or from chain stores will not remove these chemicals, as well as many other contaminants that are commonly found in water. So it requires special filters, special filter materials. And the new filter that you now have available, the new double AIO filter, has a filter in it called Metalgon, and it's been upgraded and tested to remove these PFAS chemicals. As a matter of fact, it's been tested to NF Standard 53, and it removes seven of these chemicals up to 95% for almost 400 gallons of water. That's very, very significant. In addition, the filter removes fluoride. There's very few filters that effectively remove fluoride, 92%, plus chlorine, heavy metals, and a whole range of industrial chemicals. So when you want to protect yourself and have clean drinking water, you need a sophisticated, highly technical filter system that can remove this whole range of contaminants, including these new PFAS chemicals. And that's why your system, the new filter that's being offered, the AAIO, is the best filter on the market as far as I'm concerned. And this is based on competitive analysis from other filter companies. No one has achieved the level of contaminant reduction of two filters that I've seen to date. So I'd highly recommend your listeners get these filters. If they have your filter systems already, they should upgrade to the new Metalgon filter, change it, and upgrade it. This way they'll have the best removal of all these contaminants.
Explain what is possible when persons are drinking water, even showering, the water's going in their mouth. Just tell us some of the things that we're now seeing in that water.
Well, first, just bathing alone, the byproducts of chloramine and chloramine, they're called trihalomethanes. There's a whole group of chemical disinfection byproducts that are absorbed through your skin, and you breathe them in as a gas when you're taking a shower. And they're known carcinogens. As I mentioned, they're Class B carcinogens. Over time, everything is cumulative. So when you're drinking water with multiple contaminants, you're increasing your health risks over time. It takes years or decades to see the effects of these contaminants, but when you start out as a child or even a pregnant mother ingesting water with fluoride or these chemicals, the fetus is exposed. With fluoride in particular, it affects the neurological development of an infant, and they've done 26 studies that show that children born of women who drink fluoridated water have lower IQs. That's startling. It also demineralizes your bones as you get older. It works in the opposite of what people think it does. Fluoride is a very toxic chemical. All these chemicals have long-term exposure effects on you in terms of your health, neurologically, cardiovascularly, gastrointestinally. So a lot of people have various health disorders that are linked or contributed to by ingestion of a whole range of toxins in your water and bathing in your water. So that's really why you need proper filtration that remove the whole range of contaminants to the maximum.
Thank you very much, Dr. Roy Spicer. Remember, our body is around 72% water. And I know that people, at least in this audience, care about the quality of the liquids that go into their body. That's why we recommend organic juicing, but also clean water. And you can't completely hydrate with just juices. Water is essential. In fact, the first thing in the morning, you should have a glass of water before you exercise or go out. And people are not doing that. Anyhow, and even squeezing the juice of one lemon in it. Finally, very quickly, we have Luann Panisi on the line. And it was 2 years ago that we asked if anyone wanted to volunteer to be a part of a homesteading project. And now that project is well underway and is very successful. We have people like John Q and John C and Angelo and Jerry. They are having a wonderful time. They're in retirement or semi-retirement, but they're doing what they want to do in a beautiful environment. So that was part one. Can a place become self-sustaining? Can people find a new purpose in life other than just retiring? And the answer is they can if they want to. Not everybody wants to. A lot of people don't want to move out of even harm's way. You're not going to see a mass exodus from the beaches around the United States. To the contrary, you'll be moving to those places. So our concern is that people are not getting out of harm's way. So we need to think, if I want to have a new purpose in my life, what is it? How I sustain myself? How I live? What other opportunities are available? And so that's what we took into account, plus an awful lot of older people who can't afford to retire, who are living in isolation, who are not having healthy, dynamic relationships with people. I'm not talking about sexual relationships. I'm just talking about just having friends and people you can communicate with without having arguments and fights. Well, that is now part of the intentional communities, of which there are 1,500 around the United States. One of those, just one, is multi-denomination, meaning any relation, any race, any ethnicity, any culture is invited. Age is not an issue. And now it's not about doing the homesteading projects. Those are done. We're way into it. We're doing more, like food, freeze drying of food, which can last 30 years. But for people who want quality of life without having to live around fear, or they're going to get robbed, mugged, beaten, smash and grab, or they just want to be around civil people in a beautiful environment with high quality of life, where they can relax and enjoy themselves, whatever they choose to do for the next stage in their life. Luann, would you like to take it from there?
Sure, Gary. Well, thank you for having me. And yeah, it's a very exciting time. With all the people that have attended your retreats in the past, so many people have said to me, it's so beautiful here. I wish I could just live here. Wouldn't that be great? And, well, now we have that opportunity. It's not for everyone. Certainly, there's a degree of responsibility. There's obviously, you have to take care of your own place. But you're going to be in a pristine environment with surrounded by animals and birds, the peacocks. If you haven't been to Texas to the retreat, I encourage you to come down next year in May to see if you actually want to live in a place like this. But I get so many calls, Gary, from people that are really interested in coming down and rebuilding their lives in a place that's safe, that's clean, that's beautiful, there's no 5G, and they have the opportunity to actually do what they want with their life instead of having to be a victim of whatever society is throwing at them at that moment. It's a very different way of living. Yeah.
It is, but one of the biggest issues I see, and one of the reasons I've decided to offer this right now, is because the latest studies I've seen show a disproportionate number of Americans are just lonely. And when you're lonely, you're more likely to be depressed, you're more likely to get sick, you're more likely to age prematurely, you're more likely to die sooner. So I believe that people should start looking to open a door and walk out of where they've been. It might have been great in the past, unless they're in a place that's great now, in which case stay there and enjoy that. Because we're seeing fewer and fewer places that can offer quality of life, wonderful people, open-mindedness, and an opportunity to do whatever you want or as little as you want. So that's it. Give us your phone number, Luann, if people are interested.
Truly, it's 903-881-7008. That's 903-881-7008. Give a call. I'll be thrilled to speak with you.
Thank you. And finally, for those of you who would like, at least from my perspective, and you heard Dr. Spicer, the healthiest water we can have with getting out the pollutants you're not even aware of that accumulate in the body, call this number, 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065, or go to our website. Have a nice day, everyone.